What's up, guys? Rick here with your DFS preview for the Ryder Cup. Now, this is very important because this is a different kind of week because I'll be in Rome. I'm headed off to the Ryder Cup. So this video is being released a little earlier than normal. And while there's still plenty to go through with the golf course, the players, the way they're trending in, the only thing that I don't have at the time of recording this are the salaries. We're going to talk through a little bit of strategy, but I do not have the salaries. So the goal is to release this bigger video now, go through what it's going to take to probably win around Marco Simone, the way that they can take advantage of the course, the strategy, the style, the format, all that fun stuff. And then hopefully, if I can make it happen, when salaries are released, I'll find some Wi-Fi in a quiet spot in Italy, and I'll do a quick kind of maybe 10-minute DFS recap when I do have the salaries. We can talk through that stuff as well. So bear with me. Obviously, this is not how it normally works. This is an unusual week, but I will be at the Ryder Cup Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So that's a practice round, 3 competitive rounds, potentially on Wednesday as well. So I'll be able to get as much intel as I can. Follow me on Twitter at RickRunGood. It should be an awesome week. I'm stoked for it and appreciate the patience on the schedule. Let's jump into the Ryder Cup. If you've never been around a Ryder Cup, if you've never seen one, it's pretty electric. It is the United States versus Europe, 12v12. And on Friday and Saturday, the first 2 days, there are 2 sessions each. There's a morning session and an afternoon session on Friday, morning and afternoon on Saturday, and then just 1 session on Sunday. On each of the first 2 days, there will be 1 session of 4 ball and 1 session of 4 sums. 4 ball is everybody plays their own golf ball. And if you are in a team, they'll be in teams of 2 for the United States, teams of 2 for Europe. Everybody plays their own ball, and whatever score for each team is best, that's the score for the team. So if Xander Schauffele makes a 3 and Patrick Cantlay makes a 4, that team takes Xander's 3. Then for sums, a more difficult format, that is also called alternate shot. So that's if Xander hits the tee ball, Patrick Cantlay has to hit the next shot, then Xander has to hit the third, Patrick Cantlay has to hit the 4th, and whatever score they make combined is the score for that team. It's a much more difficult format. So they'll do that each of the first 2 days, a session of each on Friday, a session of each on Saturday, and then Sunday singles is exactly what it sounds like. 1v1, all 12 players tee it up. Not all 12 players are going to play in each of the sessions before this. That's why when we get to the DFS and fantasy conversation here, and potentially the betting conversation, opportunity is a big one. Who's going to play as many of the matches as possible? That's going to be a big thing to consider. So Sunday is the only day where everybody is going to play, and whichever team has the most points when this is all said and done wins. The United States has not won on European soil in over 30 years. The venue that they'll be at this time around, just outside of Rome, Marco Simone. Here it is. This is the overhead Google Maps with a couple of my annotations. I'll talk you through this and I'll show you how this works. When we have a golf course that we don't see a lot, you always do the overhead, but we do have a little bit of Marco Simone history because it's played on the DP World Tour. Now, this is a relatively young course. I think it was built in 91, which in terms of golf courses in Europe is very, very young. And then they redid, they touched like every single hole. I think number 6 is the only hole that was not moved, not changed when they redid this in 2018. So here's the layout. We'll go through a couple of these holes and shows you what it takes. Here's where I'll be. That's where the media center is going to be, right in between the driving range and whatever this practice green is. So that's where I'll be if you need me. The way that I start looking at this golf course, I like to compare a lot of courses to Oak Hill. Oak Hill to me was a really fair, stern test, especially off the tee. And I thought it allowed the best players, especially the best players from tee to green, to separate themselves. I'm not sure Marco Simone is the same way. I actually think it is a hair quirky. I think that there is a little bit more luck involved than maybe something like Oak Hill, which was a lot of skill. Again, nothing is 100% skill. Nothing is 100% luck. But if Oak Hill was 90-10 skill to luck, I think Marco Simone might be 60-40 skill to luck, maybe 70-30 skill to luck. So we'll talk about that. Now, the way the Europeans are going to set this up, because they do get the right to set this up basically however they want, is to be pretty penal if you miss the fairway. So let's start there. So par 71, 7,181 yards. I just want to kind of show you, I'll click through some of these pictures here. A lot of what you're going to see is right off the fairway is essentially a primary cut of rough. And that might go for three. This is actually a really good example here on 15. That might go for 2 or 3 yards off the fairway. And then you are going to get kind of that taller, I don't know what you, fescue, we'll call it fescue for our purposes, which is going to be just dead, right? It's just going to, I mean, not that the primary rough is going to be particularly great, but that fescue will, one, it'll be difficult to find your ball. It'll grab your club. It'll turn it over. It'll be hard to extract your golf ball from. So that's where the big penalty starts coming into play. So you'll see that basically everywhere. Now, when you look at what this is going to require off the tee, I think it's going to take a very committed shot off the tee. And I think what you're going to see is that there are a lot of choices off the tee. Here on number two, this is a pretty darn good example, right? So you've got this fairway bunker right in the middle of the fairway. You can play it short, 246. If you carry it, you've got to carry it at least 275. But once you start carrying it there, you're driving it into an area that becomes much more narrow and then again, well protected with bunkers. Number three, here's another, this is what you see a lot around here. You see a lot of dog legs in both directions that say, how much do you want to take on? Okay. And how much you want to take on dictates the risk reward and the penalty, right? So this is the 300 yard mark on number three. It's only 29 yards wide. So in theory, you could play it shorter into the wider portion, or you could play it longer into the more narrow portion. And you see that a lot. So there is a ton of risk reward. Here's another one on 14 as I just kind of float around the property here. You know, if this is, and everything, the way that we do this, everything goes from the back of the back tee box. So if this, that way there's just a standardization to all of this. But if you, you know, if they move this tee box up, or if it becomes downwind or something, this could change. But you have options on nearly every single hole. You know, here's your 300 yard line on 14. Are some of the big hitters going to try to carry these left-hand bunkers? And if so, are they going to bring in a lot more trouble? So what you'll notice again, 16 is a good example as well. There's going to be a lot of holes, a lot of matches that end on 16. You know, water up along the right-hand side here, fairway bunkers, a bunker in the middle of the fairway. This fairway runs out at 289, but to carry the creek, it's 305 with water lurking on the right-hand side the entire time. Fairway bunkers pinching in almost every single place. You know, they pinch into fairways as opposed to kind of sitting on the outskirts of them. Here's another example on 12. You know, you can take the line at 275. You can take the line at 303. You can take the line at 318. It is truly 11. 11 is, could be drivable. 308 to the front of the green. 250 just kind of to the middle. So what you get here are a lot of really good options. I think it'd be a really good match play setup, because with those options come the ability to kind of put your foot on the pedal when you need to. If you're behind, if you need to make something up. So the way that I look at this, strong, accurate drivers of the golf ball. Okay. Probably no surprise, but these dogleg in both directions. You know, there are times where you can cut off as much left as you want. There are times where you can try to cut off as much right as you want. I think that, distance and accuracy, no surprise, going to be a very strong skill set. Probably accuracy a little bit more than distance, just because there are places where if you start spraying it with that high fescue, here's an example on five, you know, this is the 300 yard mark playing to a 24 yard wide location where water comes into play for a lot of this hole. There are spots where if you are wayward, you are going to cost yourself a shot. The penalty will be a stroke. Now, the penalty for being short is almost never going to be a stroke. So that's why I look at this and say accuracy is going to be pretty key, but I think this starts with being a very, very strong driver of the golf ball. Here's a really good drone shot from Golf Digest Every Hole At, where you can see that primary rough being just a couple of yards. Then you start getting into the thick stuff and you see this everywhere. This is on number one. You know, I always encourage you to go watch these videos. They give you a really good topographical look. There's something. So as we get into the second shot here, you know, a lot of thick rough around these greens. There are a couple of false fronts where the ball will roll off into collection areas, but you're seeing thick rough here. The ball would not, in theory, be able to get too far to that fescue around the green on number two. So I always encourage you to go get an idea of some of these. You know, the drone gives you kind of the 3D look at it. Here's kind of a false front where everything will roll off of it. The par threes, I think are relatively easy, right? That's par threes are always more difficult in professional golf, compared to fours and fives, but I think that they are relatively benign unless you start getting some of the windier conditions. This is my website, rickrungood.com, where you can just use it's a giant golf database for fantasy golf and golf betting, and you can use it to kind of see what's going on. So I've got the cheat sheet here, but before I do that, let me put a bow on the course history, because here's everybody in this field at the Ryder Cup who has played at Marco Simone. So Nikolai Højgaard's got the most rounds, 12 rounds, a win, a 27th, and a fifth place finish. You see a lot of good results here from the Europeans. Robert McIntyre won this event in 2022. Rory McIlroy Roy's played it once. He finished fourth in 2022. Tommy Fleetwood, 2021, he finished runner-up. So, I mean, there's a lot of good history for the Europeans at Marco Simone. No surprise there. Victor's actually the worst, and it's basically a stroke per round, which is pretty crazy. Okay, so here we go. Last 36 rounds leading into this, and I've got the Ryder Cup history over here on the right-hand side. So you'll see if they've played it, they have either a one or a two. If they have a one, they were part of the winning team. If they have a two, they were part of the losing team. That's how that works. If it's blank, they didn't play. So last 36 rounds, the Europeans boast three of the four best players in the world over the last 36 rounds. There are three golfers who have gained at least two strokes per round: Rory McIlroy, Victor Hovland, Scottie Scheffler. And then the next golfer, 1.86 strokes gained per round, is Tommy Fleetwood. So this is kind of what, when people are using recent form to boost up the Europeans, this is kind of what they're talking about. And then you look at the bottom, and the guys that have really struggled, the worst in terms of strokes gained total over the last 36, Justin Thomas, Jordan Spieth, those are the two worst, Sepp Straka and Sam Burns. So three of the four bottom four are Americans. Three of the top four in terms of strokes gained are Europeans. All right. So in terms of DFS, the way that DraftKings has done this previously for, I believe, Ryder Cups and President's Cups is they go to the captain's mode. Okay, the opportunity to choose a golfer, you have to choose a golfer to set as your captain who is 1.5 times the salary of their standard salary, but you get 1.5 times their fantasy points. So, for example, if Rory McIlroy is $10,000, his captain's price is $15,000. And if he scores 100 regular points, you get 150 fantasy points. Okay. So that's how it works. It creates a lot more combinations. The other thing that they have previously done, and I'm assuming they are going to do again, I do not have the salaries yet, because by the time you're watching this, I am likely in Rome and will do my best to put up a shorter video when the salaries do come up. So what they've also done is no matter what happens in a match, each partner will get the same number of points. So if Xander Schauffele and Patrick Cantlay play together and they win 5-4, it doesn't matter if Xander made 12 birdies and Patrick Cantlay did nothing. They're both getting the same number of points. Okay. Holes won, holes lost, match won, etc. Okay. So that's how it works. Now, the name of the game is opportunity. Okay. Who is going to play the vast majority of matches? Well, on the European side, we can look at Rory McIlroy, we can look at Victor Hovland, we can look at John Rahm and assume they are going to play all five matches. Victor played all five in 2021. John Rahm played all five in 2021. Rory only played four, and it was a massive deal. Remember, he got off to a slow start. I think he lost either his first two or his first three matches, and they sat him, which I thought was a horrible strategic mistake. And it was like by far the worst Ryder Cup he has ever had. In fact, he only got 1 point in 2021. He's always gotten at least 2 points in Ryder Cups. So I think it would be very unlikely again if Rory McIlroy did not play all five matches. So those are kind of the shoe-in guys for five matches. Now, who are they going to play with? Because that's kind of the other big thing here. If you can figure out who's going to play together, there's a likelihood that that they could get hot, stay together. One guy could carry another. Now, I will say this. In recent years, the analytics have played a lot more into this, which I think is smart. There used to be a time where, hey, if you were buddies and you were both good, you were going to play every single format together. It didn't matter if you were a good fit or not. Jordan Spieth, Justin Thomas, for example. But now, even after a win, you will see teams switch up a little bit more because you might have analytics that say, you know, these guys are best together in foursomes, but these guys are better together in four ball. So I do think it's a little bit harder to find a guy that is just going to ride the coattail of their five session playing partner. Rory McIlroy is kind of the absolute X factor here, or should I say his playing partner is the X factor, because Rory McIlroy has played 22 partner sessions in his Ryder Cup career. He's played 22 of them. 21 of those, that partner is not on this team. Okay. He played a lot with Ian Poulter. He played a lot with Sergio Garcia. He played a lot with Graham McDowell. He played a lot with Thomas Peters. None of those guys are on this team. The only guy that he has ever played with in a session in a Ryder Cup that is on this team right now is Shane Lowry. Shane Lowry, they played together last year at Whistling Straits. They lost 4-3 to Tony Finau and Harris English. There is the, you know, the Irish connection, right? These guys are good lads. It would make sense for Rory and Shane Lowry to give it another go here. Now, the other thing is, when you're setting your lineups, you should probably wait as long as possible, right? Wait as long as possible. If you only start picking players that are playing in the first session, not a bad idea, but we'll be able to see maybe into the lens, or when I get there on, you know, Wednesday and Thursday, usually we'll know who's in those practice pods together, right? And generally know who has a good chance of playing with one another. So Lowry is the only guy in Rory's Ryder Cup career that has played with him that is currently on this team. Victor Hovland played with Paul Casey, played with Bernd Wiesberger, and played twice with Tommy Fleetwood at Whistling Straits. This is interesting now, okay? Tommy, you know, used to play a lot with Francesco Molinari. Francesco now an assistant captain. And Tommy's been playing great golf, right? Third best player, fourth best player in the world over the last 36 rounds. Victor, number what, three? So you could have two super hot guys playing great golf who have played together before get run out there again. I think that would be very cool to see and very interesting. There's a chance they do Victor with Scandinavian Ludvig Åberg, you know, a couple of young guys go out there and just freewheel this thing, but would not be surprised to see a Fleetwood Victor partnership. Jon Rahm also kind of looking for his new partner. He often played with Sergio Garcia, the Spanish Armada, right? They went 3-0 together at Whistling Straits. He has also played with Justin Rose. He has also played with Terrell Hatton before. So there's a chance that those guys get run back out there, but Jon Rahm might be looking for a new partnership. So again, to recap, almost certainly Rory, Victor, Jon Rahm play all five sessions. Tommy Fleetwood in a really good spot to play all five sessions. I think that makes the most sense. The bottom of the European team starts to get a little bit more difficult and starts to become the path of how you could separate yourself from the rest of the field. Is Ludvig Åberg going to continue this ascension, this run, and start going nuts at the Ryder Cup? I mean, we really haven't seen anything like this, right? A guy is going to play in a Ryder Cup before he plays in a major championship. That is unheard of stuff. He won the European Masters. He finished fourth at the Czech Masters. Everybody knows this talent has been brewing for a really long time. Do they run him out there in session one and see if he can get hot? TBD. Who does he play with? TBD. You know, you look at Justin Rose, who has played so many Ryder Cups, but, you know, seemingly at the tail end of his career. Do you start to pass the torch? The bottom of this European squad is completely up in the air. I think Terrell Hatton will be really interesting, right? Hatton, depending on what that price ends up being or the way that he gets partnered up, I think is going to be critical. He's played great, consistent golf. This is the type of guy who you could partner with a lot of different golfers. Great ball striker, great putter, match play often comes down to who can get the ball in the cup first. He has rarely played poorly. He's coming off a runner-up finish at the BMW PGA Championship. We know that he has finished, what, second around here at the Italian Open at Marco Simone. There is just a lot going in Hatton's favor that I think he should be, you know, when you're starting to try to jam as many of these European guys into your lineup as possible, if it's Rory, it's Victor, if it's Tommy and Jon Rahm at the top, expecting them to play as many sessions as possible, is it then Terrell Hatton? Because to me, it is. I think that's the logical place to go as the first man of that second tier. This is the power rankings tool. So this is the strokes gain distribution, how often a golfer gains 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 strokes to the field or more. And this is why Ludvig is so dangerous. Last 36 rounds, Ludvig Åberg's gaining at least 5 strokes to the field at nearly 14% of the time. It is the highest clip of anyone in this field. More than Rory, more than Scotty, more than everyone, right? That's why Ludvig's really dangerous, but it's also why Terrell Hatton's really dangerous, right? Hatton is second here, 11.11%. 11% of the time, same as Rory, same as Scotty, same as Tommy, and same as Wyndham Clark. You start scrolling down a little bit, you know, this is why you kind of get stifled a little bit on Matt Fitzpatrick, who I love in a lot of situations, right? I love Fitzpatrick all over the globe. I'm not sure this is a great, super great place to roll him out here. He just does not have the single round upside that I would like to see. There's a lot of good to his game, but I'm not sure this is necessarily the format to be super excited about with him. Robert McIntyre, same thing. I'm not sure this is a great spot for him either, despite the good success around Marco Simone. But man, that those are tough numbers to see over the last 36 rounds in terms of strokes gained distribution. Now, the depth on the American side is real. And it's a lot harder to find the guys that are almost certainly guaranteed to play 5 matches. I think Xander Schauffele, Patrick Cantlay certainly come to mind. They have a great partnership. They can play both formats together. They've had great success at Zurich. They've had great success internationally. Those are probably the two most likely. I want to give a hat tip to Josh Siegel, who tweeted this at me. And at first, I thought this was like this weird little conspiracy theory. And then I started to think, yeah, maybe this is the case. So there was this team photo that the U.S. put out when they were in Rome practicing, I don't know, 10 days ago or something like that, before the Fortinet. And he pointed out that the distribution of hat colors kind of looks like the pots. So you see there are 4 golfers wearing all white hats: Scottie Scheffler, Max Homa, Sam Burns, Brian Harman. There are 4 golfers wearing, hold on, let me see how he has this here, blue hats, Fowler, Morikawa, JT. Oh, I'm sorry. Sorry. 6-6. So it's Harmon, Burns, Homa, Scheffler, and then seemingly Cantlay and Xander, who are not there, who could be like your white hat guys. And then blue hats would be Morikawa, Fowler, JT, Brooks, Wyndham Clark, and Spieth, who was also not there. Also, it kind of makes sense because then you look at the hats that the coaches are wearing, the assistant captains, and it looks like that's the pods that they're assigned to, right? Stricker and DL3 are wearing white hats to go with the white group. You've got the blue hats in Furyk and Sink. They're with the blue hat guys. And then Captain Zach Johnson, who is all of those, is wearing the tie-dye hat of all colors. This is like an amazing little find. I don't know if this is going to end up being the case, but it's almost too coincidental for those not to be the pods, right? And a lot of it kind of makes sense, right? We've seen Sam Burns play together. We've seen Scottie Scheffler with Scottie Scheffler. Now it would put Morikawa and Homa in opposite pods. So I don't know. That's not bad, Josh. Hat tip to you. Well done. I think that unfortunately for Josh, we're going to know the pods during practice rounds, but I hope it comes to fruition for him, because I think that would be pretty cool and a pretty cool observation. All right, so as mentioned, we've got Patrick Cantlay and Xander Schauffele almost certainly playing together. Patrick Cantlay has never been part of a losing international team. He was part of the winning Ryder Cup team in 2021 and then two separate President's Cup teams. Xander Schauffele and his well-rounded game certainly travels to international competition. Same thing. He has never lost an international competition. Colin Morikawa I find incredibly interesting because he is going to be on the lookout for a new partnership, right? He played with Dustin Johnson all three of his partner sessions at Whistling Straits. Well, DJ not on this team, so where does Colin go? Well, Colin, if we go back to Josh's photo, is wearing a blue hat, so that could be Ricky Fowler, that could be Brooks Koepka, it could be Wyndham Clark. It's probably not going to be Jordan Spieth, right? Because we know Jordan Spieth with JT in all likelihood. How about a Brooks Koepka Colin Morikawa pairing? Koepka could very much fill the Dustin Johnson role. I also think there's a pretty good chance Brooks plays a lot. Let's be real here. Zach Johnson has an asset in Brooks Koepka in which he knows this guy's a crusher. You're only going to get one. We don't see Brooks a lot. If you're Zach Johnson, you just roll him out there. If he plays great, you look like an awesome guy. If he doesn't, it's like, hey, we went with our alpha and he lost. Like, you know what I mean? Like, there's just no risk in running Brooks Koepka out there as frequently as possible. I'm hoping to get a really nice price on this guy, Brian Harmon, because I think that there is a path for Harmon playing a larger role than people want to give him credit for. He is much more well-respected amongst his peers than he might be in the larger golf media, larger golf audience. He's also much larger respected amongst the captains than a lot of people, right? Zach Johnson loves this guy. DL3 loves this guy, right? A lot of close ties to Sea Island. The format of match play being that first in wins frequently, the ability to drive it accurately and putt the lights out and have a great short game is the European model for winning this Ryder Cup at Marco Simone. So Brian Harmon could be your American European, right? Like, this course is built for guys like Brian Harmon and set up for guys like Brian Harmon. The path that he took around Royal Liverpool is exactly the path he's going to want to try to take around Marco Simone. So I think there's a path, if he can get the reps, to Brian Harmon having a very good Ryder Cup. I truly believe that. So we'll see. We'll see how quickly he can get out there and if he can get a good partner and who they're going to put him with. But let's see. Let's go back to Josh's photo. So he'd be in the white group. So that would be probably Max Homa, right? If we assume Xander and Cantlay are wearing white hats wherever they are and they are together, you probably get Burns and Scotty. That leaves Homa and Harmon. Homa's been one of the best players on tour recently. That would not be a bad partnership at all. I'm really just doing a lot of speculating here. We're going to see the pods. Eventually, we will get, you know, the opening round, the opening session groups, and we will know. We won't have to guess anymore, but just trying to give you the ability to think through a couple of the options here. Let me hit you with some more numbers. Here's the trends tool. So this is everybody in the field over the last 36 rounds, how they're playing against their baseline, and then their new adjusted strokes gained trend number. Victor Hovland, super hot right now, half a stroke, basically two-thirds of a stroke above his 100-round baseline. Tommy Fleetwood, half a stroke over. Åberg, a half a stroke over. Brian Harman, a half a stroke over, okay? And that raises Brian Harman's baseline above Colin Morikawa's strokes gain trend, right? So there's just a lot of really good stuff coming from the Harman camp right now. If you look at guys that are, the only bad thing about Brian Harman is that he's just putting so well. Now, he's putting above his baseline, which is a little bit scary, but I don't really worry about that for guys who are good putters. That's kind of what they do. It's not super crazy. I would worry about that if he was a very bad putter. But you look at guys that are on the verge of snapping off right now, guys that are hitting it well, putting below their baseline. Obviously, Scottie Scheffler's in there. Sam Burns is in there, which could be, if they play together, a very difficult group if both those guys snap back at the same time. Justin Rose, Ludvig Åberg, Max Homa. What do you see there? Three Americans, two Europeans. Ludvig continues to pop up in all the metrics, right? That's kind of the thing here. If you go with Eduardo Molinari and his metrics-based plan, you got to think it has a lot of Ludvig Åberg in it, right? Now, do you run out a rookie who has had, you know, so little experience anywhere in the world five times? I doubt it, but I think the numbers that Eduardo are going to put out there are going to be pretty impressive on this guy. Let's build a model here. Rick Rungood custom model. I'll zoom in so you can see this a little bit better. You can input the weights any way you want, and when the salaries come out, you can build lineups with this. We got to kind of reset everybody back to probably the last 75 rounds or so. It's been a while since a lot of these guys, had some time off. I know all 12 of them played, at the BMW PGA Championship, but for those who didn't, generally the time of year which we reset everybody back to the last 75 rounds. Let's start with the off the tee stuff. So we need a accurate driver. Let's go 20 on accuracy, 10 on distance. Let's also go with, I don't want to put too much there. Strokes gained approach. Let's go strokes gained approach last 24 rounds, less 36 rounds for 20. And then let's just put strokes gained around the green last 50 for 10, strokes gained putting last 50 for 10. What I'm also going to do is I'm going to do strokes gained total five or more and four or more, 10 each. I want high upside guys. That is exactly what I want here. And then I have 10 weights left. Let's go. It's a pretty short course, 7,100 yards, 70 par 71. We could do, let's just go back to here and do fantasy points gained. Okay. My number one golfer is Scottie Scheffler. My number two golfer is Victor Hovland, Rory McIlroy, John Rahm. There's Justin Rose again. Xander is six, Morikawa is seven, Cantlay eight, Ricky nine, Hatton 10. Who's the last? Yeah. The bottom of this board, 20 through 24. Fitzpatrick, Højgaard, Burns, Lowry, McIntyre. Harman gets a pretty bad score here. He gets knocked on fantasy points. He gets knocked on driving distance. He gets knocked on approach and the high upside stuff. Yeah, it's fair. It's fair. Ludvig again, 14th, rates out pretty well. So we'll know when the salaries come out, that'll be time to do a little bit of the game theory and the roster construction. But we were able to cover golf course. We were able to look at potential pairings. We were able to look at who's playing well and who's not. I think we've done a pretty good job here for a run at this without the salary. So appreciate everybody stopping in and checking out and bearing with me on the schedule this week. I hope to be able to put something together later in the week when salaries do come out. And of course, follow me on Twitter. I'll email out the newsletter for this week, rickrungood.com/newsletter. I'll just be throwing as much Ryder Cup stuff at you as I could possibly throw. I think that's it. All right. Best of luck this week. I'll talk to you guys soon.